Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Los Angeles to speak with William Updike of the Locked On Clippers podcast to talk about tampering, the recruitment of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to the Clippers. We'll then go to Washington to speak with Troy Halliburton of Locked On Wizards about the Isaiah Thomas injury and Rui Hachimura's form in the FIBA World Cup. And lastly, we go to Miami to speak with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat about Tyler Hero, his rookie campaign, and Mike Schmitz having him in the list of rookies to outperform their draft slot this season. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at Basketball Monster and Yahoo Sports Australia. We are here with the NBA about a month away from the regular season kicking off, talking about some injury news, some tampering news, and a little bit of a focus on some NBA rookies. So let's get to it. Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Clippers podcast. William Updike is here to talk to me about one of the, this must sound weird still, William, one of the favorites for the NBA title, the LA Clippers. Doc Rivers, over the last couple of days, has come out with some interesting quotes. It ties all back into some of the stuff that Adam Silver and the Board of Governors have been talking about with the tampering process. But let's start with Rivers' comments about the narrative of how Kawhi Leonard joined this team. And how the Clippers knew in advance that Oklahoma City was looking to break up that team, and the Kawhi was only coming, and he wasn't enamored by anything else on the team apart from if the fact they got Paul George.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting. I think it was pretty apparent, that Kawhi's decision was going to be hinged on wanting to pair with someone else. It was just going to be a matter of who that was going to be able to be. And it makes sense that the Clippers, recruiting Kawhi for an entire season, already had a list of names together that they thought that they could go ahead and go out and get. And Paul George, that seems like a natural fit, really.
Yeah, look, those guys, they obviously wanted to play together. They can work together in those forward positions or shooting guard, depending on how they want to label themselves for this upcoming season. But With this George situation and Kawhi, how does it not feel, I guess is the wrong word, but when he says, look, no, I'm not interested in anybody else on this team, I want Paul George, is there a chance that maybe with this team having such a good camaraderie, with all the good vibes from Lou Williams and Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell last season, all those guys gelling and having that sense of teamwork, and guys like Leonard and George coming in, and is there any sort of like, hey, Kawhi, you didn't think we were good enough, you had to bring your mate in, is there any of that that's potentially a risk here with this team?
Well, I think that that is, I think that that's like the narrative that people are trying to push, which is definitely interesting. But I mean, to be perfectly frank, like looking at it as a fan, I think that that team that we had last year with no All-Stars plus Kawhi, to me, is a championship team. But I can understand looking at it, if you're Kawhi, a Finals MVP, a guy who's definitely, already faced some pretty hard injury stuff, looking at that lineup, that is simply... that's simply not enough if, you're worried about your legacy or you're thinking about your career moving forward. It's natural to me that you would want the type of all-star compliment that really we didn't have. Arguably, there were, borderline all-stars like Gallo or somebody like that. But it makes sense that if you are the player of Kawhi's caliber at the top of your game, you get to pick your man. So I do understand where he's coming from in that sense. And I don't think that anyone on the Clippers would be, I just don't see anyone being that hurt by that. It's all, it's a locker room of veterans and consummate professionals. So I think that everyone there kind of knows the score. Obviously, last year with the huge amount of turnaround, I think that, you know, guys were pretty primed for the idea that, you know, that there was going to be a lot of turnover, then there was going to be a lot of movement. And even through all of that, it stayed pretty tight. And in the locker room, at least when I was there, everyone still seemed very close, even the newest guys that were acquired at the trade deadline. So I personally don't think it's going to affect the locker room. But, you know, TBD, I guess.
Now, the other thing with this Paul George and Kawhi Leonard stuff, which comes a couple of days, a day after the NBA, you know, really sort of announced a bigger focus on tampering. This situation where it's obvious that these teams were in contact with, you know, our players, contracted players, where everyone knew this, you know, the Clippers knew that Kawhi wanted Paul George, and the only way to know that, of course, is if they've spoken to him. Does this... there's not going to be no retroactive action, but is this something that is of any sort of concern moving forward? Is this the sort of thing the NBA is trying to eliminate, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's a hard... It's really hard to nail down 100%, you know, what that tampering is. I feel like they haven't given... a really succinct blanket description as to what that is. You know, because if Kawhi and Paul George were in talks before, that's not exactly on the team.
I don't see how that can be policed. I don't see how player to player contact can be stopped or policed if they say, "Hey,
yeah,
I want you to."
Yeah,
hey,
I don't see any way in which they can really crack down on that.
Yeah, and this is what's happened here. Obviously, yeah. Then that part's fine. Kawhi going to Paul George and saying, "Hey, we want to go play. Let's see if we can get ourselves to the Clippers." And Paul George asking for a trade or whatever. But I guess the part the NBA doesn't really like about that is then the Clippers knowing about that in advance and having that discussion. And have already spoken to Kawhi and saying, well, I need to get Paul George here. He's up. You need to go and make a deal. So I understand that that's probably the part that they're... But again, how this stuff is almost impossible to enforce. I guess when stories like this come out, you do have then evidence to be able to prosecute. But if people were actually smart and didn't like just blab this information to everybody, I can't see how any of this stuff, if people wanted to keep it secret, it's very easy to do.
Absolutely. Well, and I guess my flip side of the thing would be, you know, the most common narrative that we hear about is the NBA wants to crack down on tampering because it hurts small market teams. I'm sorry. I just feel like you'd be hard pressed to show me how OKC didn't benefit out of this trade just, you know, like as much as the Clippers did. They needed a refresh. This was by far the best return that they were going to get. And then, you know, it was able to like grease the wheels for them to make another trade. For another superstar and essentially hit the reset button with a chest load full of assets. And I think that, you know, like the other scenario is, you know, Paul George demanding a trade once the season starts and then everybody knows about it and his value is very low. So I guess when you talk about tampering, really which thing is more damaging? You know, you have your Jimmy Butler situations or you have something that, you know, happens player to player in the offseason wherein the team is still able to reap some sort of reward. I think it's like one of those things that's really hard to police. And I mean, it's kind of a what would you rather, you know? This is like the blessing and the curse of a player-driven league. And I think that it's interesting to me because, you know, you look at the NFL where thus far the players don't have a lot of power, and now there's a push for the players to have this sort of power. Meanwhile, in the NBA, it seems like the owners are trying to take a step backwards into that sort of NFL type ownership and like police everything with the tampering. So I don't know. I think that it's like, to me, it's kind of much ado about nothing, because it's one of those things that like until you're really able to nail down what that definition is and what type of transactions qualify as that, to me, it's just like a shake of the finger or a slap on the wrist.
I think part of what it is with the NBA is them coming out to make sure it looks like they're doing something. But in
yes.
reality, in reality, you can't stop this. This is just what people do in everyday life. If you're at a job and not that you're not happy, but if you're saying, well, there's another opportunity that might be opening up, like, you go and do a, you'll take a job interview at another company even while you're working at your current job, because hey, maybe this opportunity works out better. You have a sick day and you go and do an interview. Oh, you're feeling much better, boss, after you've been for an interview. So it's just them coming out there and, yeah, I guess giving the idea that they're policing it. But in reality, there is absolutely zero way of this being able to be stopped. It might suck for the team.
It's a free market.
Yeah, it might suck for the team on the other end, but I agree with you in terms of what the Thunder got back in this deal. This sets them up perfectly to start this rebuild. Multitudes of draft picks. Hey, they might be picks in the 20s, but you know what? You can get good players in the 20s as long as you're smart about it. Pascal Siakam was like the 28th pick, and now he's, you know, dominating in the NBA finals. So you can get that, just having extra bites of the cherry. I do think it does really set the Thunder up well, so I agree. That is a win-win, but... yeah, there is optics to pay attention to, and that's, I guess, what the league is looking at here. So lots to digest with all of that. William, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA and talking to me about the Clippers and their big season coming up.
Absolutely. Can't wait. It's still so crazy to hear you say the champion favorite Clippers.
Long day at work? Still stuck at the office? Treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Wizards podcast, Troy Halliburton, is here. A couple of things happening in Wizards land, Troy. Number one of those is an injury to Isaiah Thomas. It looked like there was going to be a battle for the starting point guard job. Maybe that had already been decided, and Thomas's injury history had dictated that he'd be on a lower minutes limit and coming off the bench. But now he has suffered a thumb injury, torn a ligament in his thumb that's going to keep him out for 6 to 8 weeks, which means that we're only 4 weeks away from the beginning of the NBA season. So he's going to miss training camp. He's going to miss the first few weeks of the season. How much of a blow is this, not only to the Wizards, but in terms of Thomas's comeback into, or trying to come back into NBA relevancy?
Well, it's a major blow to the Wizards coming into the season, just because it kind of throws their point guard rotation into a little bit of flux. Because really, I mean, they didn't really address the point guard position as many people wanted them to during the offseason. You know, they had Thomas Satoransky, who left as a restricted free agent and went to Chicago. And so their solution to replace those minutes from Satoransky was to sign Ish Smith, who's been a career backup, and Isaiah Thomas, who, you know, hasn't really played much over the last two seasons. So, you know, now with Thomas, you know, being out, they'll have to turn to, you know, a pair of younger players. Justin Robinson was an undrafted free agent that the Wizards signed. And it looks like he's going to have to step up. And they also brought in Chris Chioza, who played last year with the Capital City Go-Go. But he was called up by the Houston Rockets at the end of the season. He was actually on the Rockets playoff roster, but he was recently released by them. But he's now back with the Wizards organization and will go to training camp with them. So between Robinson and Chris Chioza, they'll be able to, you know, kind of, I don't know, be a stopgap replacing IT's minutes until he's able to come back.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that the Wizards or anybody really was relying upon Thomas to provide huge production, but of course it is a blow. As you said, Ish Smith, a career backup type who's going to have to shoulder a pretty large load. But a few weeks, maybe a month or so, maybe 2 months ago, I made a comment somewhat flippantly saying that I wouldn't be surprised that if some point this season the best point guard on the Wizards is actually Justin Robinson, and now he's going to get an opportunity much earlier than expected to come in and play these minutes. A guy that was really productive in college. He signed that, you know, 4-year deal. It was only partially guaranteed for, or non-guaranteed for the final 2 years, but straight after the draft, and they had him immediately penciled in as that third string point guard. So is there anything that you can tell us about Justin Robinson? How do the Wizards view him? Because again, Thomas and Smith, they're both 30 years of age. Robinson is the only young point guard on this roster, and he's going to get this opportunity immediately.
Well, I like Justin Robinson. I know that the members of the Wizards organization, they very much like Justin Robinson. As I said, you know, he was a priority undrafted free agent target for them. And I do recall that when they had their mini camp before they went out to Las Vegas for Summer League, Justin Robinson had his media availability. And he actually made a very interesting comment where he said that he and his agent were turning down opportunities to be drafted later in the second round. So, you know, in those 50s picks where, you know, he said that he wanted to come to Washington because they had reached out to him and he knew that he would have an opportunity to play. So I think that, you know, the relationship, the team loves him. He wanted to be here. So as you said, that there's a grand opportunity in front of him. But again, I want to mention that the team also very much loves Chris Chioza too. So, you know, I don't think that this is something that, you know, is guaranteed that he's just going to, you know, be given this opportunity. You know, he's going to have to earn his playing time.
It is interesting what you mentioned about that second round in the NBA draft. That is something that happens quite often, is that the players, you know, looking at a guy that gets picked 50th, versus the guy that gets undrafted. Quite often the player that gets undrafted is the better prospect, but there is a lot of negotiation that goes on between agents and teams saying, hey, don't pick my guy. We want to go to this area. You're just going to be, you know, causing a disruption and you're going to create bad blood. If you pick him, let us pick where we want to go. And that's why the back end of an NBA draft is such a weird experience. And this happens. And we saw both Justin Robinson and Jalen Lecque, who went to the Phoenix Suns, immediately after the draft finished, signed four-year deals straight after the draft, which is not something that any really second round guys get at any point. So that was really interesting. So he's going to get that chance along with Scherzer to battle for those minutes. The last thing I want to talk to you about here, Troy, the FIBA World Cup is over. And of course, there was a big name Washington Wizards player, a big name player who's yet to play a game. Rui Hachimura playing for Japan. They got beaten quite comfortably in a lot of their games. But what did you see from Rui in a big time international tournament that Wizards fans should be getting interested about?
I think that his play in the FIBA World Cup was very encouraging, simply because he looked the part of an NBA player. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just really, you know, looking the part and you know, getting the opportunity to show that, you know, he belongs in the NBA. And so I think that when the Japanese national team, they didn't really play as well in the actual FIBA tournament, but they did at least. I think they beat Germany in the friendly games, and that I think that was their first time beating a European team ever in FIBA competition. So I think that Rui, you know, he showed that he had the athleticism that, you know, at the very least that, you know, he belongs in the NBA. And so I think, you know, he had a couple highlight dunks. I think, you know, some of the things that was kind of discouraging was the fact that when they played, you know, tougher teams, when they played Team USA, you know, they really kind of singled out Rui Hachimura and never really let him get going. I think he had like 4 points in the game. He did dunk on Miles Turner, which was a great highlight. But, you know, I think that he will be a work in progress coming into the NBA season. But again, I say at the very least, he shows that, you know, he has the athleticism and the body type that he 100% belongs on the court with other elite athletes such as NBA players.
Rui hasn't been playing basketball his whole life, so there is a lot of development still ahead of him. I think the Wizards will be marginally cautious in terms of how much they throw at him. We know Scott Brooks notoriously just hates rookies with a passion that even Steve Clifford would be proud of. So I don't think he's going to be in there 35 a night. Troy Brown barely played for this team. Russell Westbrook played behind Earl Watson as a member of the Thunder as a rookie as well. So I'm not expecting Rui to come in there straight away and play huge minutes, but he is going to get an opportunity on a team that needs scoring, and this is one of the bright points of the future. And he did show you know, some glimpses that Wizards fans should be able to get excited about over in China at the FIBA World Cup. Troy, there's going to be things that Wizards fans are going to have to pay attention to this season. It might be bleak at times, but there are some bright spots there with this squad, and you'll have it all covered for us over on Locked On Wizards. So thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
No problem, Josh. I appreciate you reaching out. And, you know, I always love to sit back and talk some Wizards. And unfortunately, they had some breaking news last week. So, you know, there's a hashtag we have in the Wizards Twitter community called hashtag So Wizards. So, you know, that's just kind of tough. But I look forward to talking with you during the season.
Thanks, man. I'm now joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Heat podcast. Wes Goldberg is here with me. And over the last day or so, maybe it was even today, I don't know exactly the date, a couple of days ago, on ESPN Plus or ESPN Insider, I think it's ESPN Plus now, Mike Schmitz wrote an article talking about six NBA rookies most likely to outperform their draft slot this season. And one of the names that was mentioned in this article was the Miami Heat's first round pick, Tyler Hero, who was really a big attraction in Summer League. Wes, we saw him there when we were in Vegas watching it. Yeah, lots of attention drawn towards him. The efficiency wasn't quite there, but he put up, he was very bold in the way that he played. Where does Hero sit in terms of this Heat rotation? How excited should Miami fans be? What's Eric Spoelstra's history like with playing rookies? What are we looking at? And do you agree with Schmitz's take that Hero is going to outperform this number 13 pick?
First of all, it was pretty surprising to see him list Hero as really one of the top rookies who he thinks is going to outperform his draft slot, because when the Heat took him at 13, a malign pick, it was like, yeah, people thought it was a reach at that time. For Mike Schmitz to come out and say that he might actually outperform that 13 slot as opposed to it being a reach, and it really does reflect what Hero looked like during Summer League. You're absolutely right. The efficiency numbers like it to be, but that's not really what you're looking for necessarily from Summer League. You don't want any big red flags, but from Summer League, you're just at their feel for the game. Do they look like they can handle an NBA game? Do they look like they're one of the adults in the room when they're on the court, as opposed to a lot of these guys who are trying to just make it into the league, let alone some of these fringe players that are just barely in the league. So he very much looked like that. He looked like he was in control. He was in charge of ball handling a lot, especially in Las Vegas, in a way that probably won't translate to the NBA, but the Heat historically really do like to test their rookies. Eric Spoelstra in particular likes to test his rookies during Summer League, kind of, you know, push the envelope, see where they're comfortable, and then more importantly, see at what point they become uncomfortable. And we didn't really see that at any point from Tyler Hero. He didn't become uncomfortable. There were a few defensive lapses, you know, there was a few questionable shots that he took, but nothing really uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think a lot of Heat fans were very reassured by what they saw there.
Yeah, some of the shots were questionable. He definitely had no fear in getting those shots off, which is, again, is something that it can be a problem sometimes for rookies, just you're not feeling quite comfortable there. The ball handling, like, he's in a different role, but we've seen Spoelstra do this in the past. Like, a couple of years ago, I remember seeing Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson run point guard for the Heat Summer League team, something which nobody had any inkling that they'd be able to do. Winslow now is apparently transitioning to a full-time point guard. Richardson ran the offense at times last season for the Heat. So Spoelstra does do that. And, you know, we're not going to see it with Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Winslow, even Deion Waiters, who can run as a ball handler this season. You're not going to see much of Hero doing that. But having that ability, maybe that's something that comes into play 2 or 3 years down the track, similar to another Kentucky guard, Devin Booker, who coming out of college was really more just of a spot-up type shooter, not a ball handler, and now, you know, played point guard at stretches for the Phoenix Suns. I'm not saying Hero is Booker, because that would be, you know, I think, lofty praise. It's undeserved.
I think with Hero, you hope that he does not put in that situation. I mean, the Suns have played Booker in that leading role for so long because they just haven't had another point guard to do it. And in the Heat's case, like, Tyler Hero probably should play off the ball. He's going to be a secondary ball handler. Look, he's a below average athlete. He really struggles at getting to the rim. His bread and butter is going to be hitting threes, and when the defense close out, putting the ball on the floor, getting to that mid-range area and looking for a kick out, not necessarily looking to finish at the rim.
He is a guy that I've said this to you. I think we said it when we did the Locked On Fantasy Heat preview, that I wouldn't be surprised if Hero has the highest free throw percentage in the entire NBA this year. He missed 6 free throws all of last season in college out of, I think, 93 or 94 attempts, which is obviously a crazy number. Now, his long-range shooting over his career is not great. His ESPN's database in terms of his play going back the last couple of years, only 34% from three on almost 400 attempts. That's not the indicator indicator of a good long-range shooter. But as I said, free throw shooting can often translate if you've got a good form, and he is one of the best free throw shooters. So that is going to be something to watch. If he can knock in 39% versus 36%, can he beat Landry Shamet from last year, who was knocking in 40% plus of his three-pointers? That's what his role is going to be on this Heat team that does need to get up more three-pointers, because they weren't hitting them at a high rate last season. So there is a role there. Again, it's going to be, I guess, relatively muted and not exactly what we see from him or what we saw from him in Summer League. The other names on this list, Wes, Nickeil Alexander-Walker's there, Brandon Clark, Grant Williams, Ty Jerome. But the interesting name at the top of this list, I think, is Michael Porter Jr., who we list there. Obviously not a pick from the 2019 draft, but everything seems to be trending in the right direction here for Porter. I know you're not a Nuggets person, but I just thought I'd attack this onto the end here. How do you see Porter fitting into this Nuggets rotation?
It's going to be a work in progress, not only for him, but for a lot of these sort of bench guys for the Nuggets. And Michael Malone is going to give everybody an opportunity to begin the season. He tends to shy away from going deep in his rotation. I think he prefers to keep it pretty tight, like in the playoffs and stuff. But during the regular season, he's going to give all these guys an opportunity. And what Michael Porter Jr. potentially brings to the table, the other guys he might be competing for minutes with, is just the ability to go get buckets. And that's why he got drafted. That's why he was people were so excited about him, you know, even after the injury, really, but mostly prior to the injury. There was the Kevin Durant comparisons were mostly because of his body and his ability to, again, he's got a smooth shooting stroke and everything that goes along with it, but he needs to be healthy more than anything. And if he can do that, and then all of a sudden the Nuggets have something that they were missing, which was just a dynamic score. I mean, Jamal Murray is dynamic. He is able to do things. He's able to lead an offense. Gary Harris is nice for them too. Obviously, Nikola Jokic, more of a facilitator. They probably liked him to be a little bit more aggressive with his scoring. But this is a team that needs scoring, that thrives with scoring, or thrives when they are scoring, and Michael Porter Jr. could just be another weapon for them. And look, even if he's not the superstar player that many people imagined him to be coming out of high school, if he gives you, I don't know, let's call it 15 minutes a night, 8 to 10 points a game in a short amount of time span and can be efficient, that's a really useful player.
Yeah, there is an opportunity there for him. Obviously, we had Torrey Craig starting at small forward in the playoffs. Will Barton struggled last year. Paul Millsap and Jerami Grant at the four makes it a little bit hard to break in there. But there is an opportunity for Porter if that shooting and that scoring comes around. As you mentioned, it is going to be something he's going to need to have to prove to get into that spot. But there is an opportunity. And he is really interesting to see how it all develops. So we'll see how he goes this season. We'll see how Tyler Hero goes with the Miami Heat. Two guys who probably are going to be in the rotation from day one. Wes, you'll have all of the Heat news covered for us over on Locked On Heat this season. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for another episode of the Locked On NBA podcast. Make sure you are subscribing so you never miss an episode. Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher. And if you could leave us a 5-star review, that would be excellent. Go and follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and follow our guests as well and listen to their individual podcasts right across the Locked On Podcast Network, and follow us on Twitter at @LockedOnNBAnet and the same over on Instagram. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.